food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Tuesday, February 4th, 2014 is the day. Thank you once again for joining Financial Survival. And, all right.
What are you giggling about, Melody?
I don't know. I see us. It doesn't. We can't open the program this way. I see that we're connected twice. I'm not quite sure how that works. But as long as the listeners are hearing us and we're going out on air, I guess that's all that matters. You know, it was so easy when all you had to do was pick up the stupid phone and dial. Yeah, it was so. Life was good. Life was easy.
But we had a better sound quality on Skype.
No, because when we could do it by phone, that was the best there was at that time, so no one knew any difference.
Well,
so,
I get you.
You know, so no. Eliminate all
but
these machines.
But it is technically better.
No, I mean, there was ways to do very good programs even before computers. I mean, the...
Yeah, you actually had to get dressed and go to the studio. All right? Now... Hey, it's a much more casual approach, much more convenient in a lot of regards.
Life was better without technology, period. And,
you just say that because you were younger when they had no technology, that's all. Now they're getting all this technology when we are getting too old to understand how to use it. Eighth grade kids... 8-year-old kids, they can understand technology. People my age, we understand light switches. You understand?
Did you ever watch Star Trek?
Sure.
Did you ever see that one guy that was blind and he used to wear those glasses that, you know, when a...
I remember. Geordi. Geordi. His name was Geordi, black guy.
Well, this morning I was watching a CNBC and they had this guy on that created these viewing technical thing you put on that looked just like that.
A thingamabob.
And they were headsets to where you could actually watch movies, and they created this to where it would, you know, however your eyeballs and ears work, this was all in tuned in how you would view this movie. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, it's going to be freaky in 20 years.
I understand.
It's going to be real freaky. And people are so, these kids are so willing to accept all of this wearable computers and these chips. You know, they just think it's a fad. They think it's cool. They think they're going to get ahead. They think they're going to it will better them. And it's really truly, and maybe it's just because we're old, frightening. And maybe 50 years, it's just going to be commonplace. And
see, in our generation, we experimented with drugs. In this generation, they experiment with technology. Hmm? See my point, Melody? No. You don't see it?
I see your point, but I'm not sure that's a valid.
It's an interesting point. It's an interesting point. The point is the kids take risks. The kids are... They are intrigued by life and eager for life, and they're willing to take risks. They risk things with drugs. They risk things with technology. Leave them an opportunity, and they'll have a bowling ball implanted in their head. All right? If they think it'll improve their audio-visual experience on YouTube. So, that's cool. I got a bowling ball implanted in my head, and it improves my reception of YouTube videos. No, they'll do that. Later on, you get older and you realize maybe that's not a good idea and you become more cautious, more prudent, and maybe a little bit more paranoid, and maybe a little bit more sensible. But in any case, that's where we are right now. At my age, more sensible and less willing to take risks.
Well, the markets were a little more sensible today. Of course, we figured we'd see a little bit of a comeback from the Dow. Gold clawed back a little bit. We had a low of 1246, currently at 1255, down 230. Silver was up 17 cents today at 1961. Platinum was down 8 at 1381. And palladium, too many P's, palladium down 1 at 705. USDX today was trading a little bit higher, 0.07 at 81.13. Crude oil was up almost a dollar at 97.38. The paper markets today, let's take a peek.
Yeah.
71 points. 72 points on the Dow to the positive, 15,445. The NASDAQ was up 35 points, 4,031. S&P up 13 at 1755. 10-year yield was up 0.04 at 2.62%. Japan got whacked last. The Nikkei got whacked last night. I believe that was down like 600 points. Some of those Asian markets opened up. They took their down. European markets were down when I was seeing earlier today. I don't know if they had a chance to recover before they closed. The Nikkei was down 4%. The Hang Seng was down 2%. European markets were down. They didn't recover. The FTSE was down. The DAX was down. And so we'll probably see some upticks around the world overnight since the Dow was up. But we expected this kind of a recovery, not a recovery, but a,
reaction.
After you have a 300-point drop, you're going to come back a little bit. But,
sure.
So
it's most likely. And so we'll watch and see what happens the balance of the week. We're going to see the jobs report come out on Friday, and that may or may not make things jump up, jump down, jump sideways, whatever. We'll watch and see. Or perhaps a butterfly will flap its wings in the Amazon, and that will be the excuse for whatever happens to the Dow Jones tomorrow. What do you think, Melody? Think that chaos theory will explain the butterfly effect. That may be what's changing the markets. I wonder if Bernanke and Yellen and the rest of the geniuses that are trying to run this country's economy, I wonder if they consider the butterfly effect. You think they do?
Who knows? They might. Mm-hmm. They might. Under Obama, debt, I don't know how... The debt... Under Obama, up. And we're going to talk about some other things today, but of course, the debt is up 6.666. It's increased. 6.666 trillion since Obama took office on January 20th, 2009, and that's according to the latest numbers that were released by the Treasury Department. So, interesting numbers. It did not exceed
didn't exceed 6.65, or did exceed 6.65?
It did.
Uh-huh, okay. Well, in any case, the numbers are going up. Debt's going up. Who's going to pay the debt? That's the question. And the answer is supposed to be all the taxpayers will pay the debt. Mm-hmm. Just what have we got? We're talking about an extra $1 trillion in debt, more than an extra $1 trillion in debt for each year that Obama has been in office. Debt has gone up. Let me see here. Hundreds of I think I've done this right here. I'm doing it. Divided by 310 million. Whoops. We're talking about, I think we're talking about an extra $3,000 per person in debt per year. Huh? You folks are now, if I've done the math right, and I probably haven't, because after all, I am a mature, I'm a senior citizen. We don't have to do math correctly anymore. It's kind of like new math is actually for senior citizens, and real math is for grade school, high school, and college kids. And after that, your requirement to do math properly is it's more relaxed. But an extra $3,000 a year in debt. Now, that's extra on top of what already exists. And after 6 years, that's an extra $18,000 for every man, woman, and child in the country. So, folks, you are individually $18,000 deeper in debt than you were 6 years ago when Obama took office. And each of your kids are $18,000 more deeply in debt. And your spouse is more deeply in debt for $18,000. So a family of four is what? Something like an additional $70,000 in debt over the past 6 years. How many of you have an extra $60,000 to make good on that debt? And I'm going to guess that while some of you have the resources to pay it, I don't think any of you want to. What's the probability that that debt is going to be paid? I don't want to pay it. Do you want to pay it? You know, it's like, look, if the government wants to run up all this debt, that's their business. Let the government pay for it. People are just going to sit back and say, I don't care. I'm not paying for that stuff. I didn't ask for it. Why should I have to pay for it? And the government said, no, you've got to pay for the debt. And a lot of people are going to just sit back and say, no, we don't. And we're not going to. All of it is just evidence that we're headed. Pardon me?
It's not a matter we're not going to. We can't.
Well, that's what it comes down to. That's where we're headed.
There's no choice. We can't.
Yeah, yeah. The debt can't be paid. And what does that mean? It means those entities that are holding on to debt instruments right now that are issued by the government and or the Federal Reserve, low probability that they will ever be paid in full, and a high probability that they will lose half or more, and probably down in the neighborhood of 80-90% of what they've loaned to the government. Probably going to suffer those kinds of losses, although they might not happen. You know, no one knows how soon this might happen. It might be a couple of years before we actually see evidence of that taking place, but it could be a couple of months also. No one knows. But the fundamental reality, too much debt, the debt is unpayable, which means a whole bunch of debt instruments that people are holding, they're treating as assets, are going to be found to be worthless. And those people who've trusted, we harp on this on the program on a regular basis, those people who stored their wealth in the form of paper debt instruments are at considerable risk. Those who've stored their wealth in the form of something tangible like land or tools or firearms, bullets, and gold and silver are going to be much better protected. Their wealth will probably be preserved, certainly with the gold and silver and anything tangible. It's going to be infinitely superior to that which is the most of what is paper debt instruments.
Today, the Farm Bill was sent to Obama today for signing. It has something for everyone. Among the nation's 47 million food stamp recipients and all the way to southern peanut growers and Midwest corn farmers and the maple syrup industry in the Northeast. This farm bill had a lot of setbacks, but it's nearly $100 billion a year. And, of course, Obama is expected to sign it. The Senate passed the bill 68-32 after House passage last week. And, of course, there's a lot of subsidies in there. And, I mean, it's just the biggest, 80% of this farm bill I read really goes to the food stamp recipients.
Yeah, no.
To me, that is just mind-boggling. Even as bad as John McCain is, in my view, he thinks that this amount is mind-boggling, that the amount of money that is spent on farm subsidies and nutrition and development assisted programs, they don't call it food stamps anymore, and special interest pet projects. How are we supposed to restore the confidence of the American people with this monstrosity? But
I'll tell you what, it's much worse than a lot of people suppose. I don't care about how much they're putting out in food stamps. That does not disturb me particularly. All right, but the food stamp program is administered by the Department of Agriculture.
Yeah.
And as I've talked about on this program from time to time over the years, I've been sued by the Attorney General of Texas for $25,000 a day for being associated with the manufacture and distribution of colloidal silver, which they deem to be a drug. It's just an inexpensive antibiotic. All right, we beat them with a religious freedom defense. But in the process, we learned that the definition of drugs presumes the people to be animals. And if you're an animal, you have nowhere near, you have no meaningful rights whatsoever. As a man made in God's image, endowed by your creator with certain unalienable rights, you have enormous access to rights that the government is very much, that the government can't ignore or legally overcome. As animals, you've got nothing. Now, a lot of people say, oh, that's crazy talk, that's crazy. No, it's not. I can point you to the definitions of drugs in the federal law and in the Texas law and a number of other states and all the way back to the 1906 Pure Food and Drug Act. But here is a point. I am arguing that the government views the people as nothing but animals. And what we're talking about in this segment is the idea that food stamps are administered by the Department of Agriculture. The Department of Agriculture, we can understand that it would be concerned with corn and wheat and cows and pigs and goats. It would be concerned with, you know, commercial food products as you grow them out of the ground and also livestock. And then you look and you say, oh my gosh, the people that should be concerned with livestock, animals on the farm, are the same ones that are administering the food stamp program. Is that evidence that the government perceives the people to be animals, livestock on some kind of a farm? And I'm going to guarantee you that, yes, it is. As crazy as that sounds, I will guarantee you that you dig deep enough and you will find out that's the truth of the matter. Government is dispersing food stamps to the livestock on the American plantation, and that's what's happening right now. We're going to take a break for some commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Adisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned. We'll be back in a moment.
Have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thethepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
We're bringing back the silver package, $1,600 for $40 face value and 41-ounce silver eagles. And for $1,600, it includes all your shipping costs on that. And that $1,600 also includes some of the walkers. So we have some of those walkers in there included with some quarters and dimes. So they'll just get a mixed bag, whatever's available. But give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins for discount gold, silvercoins.com.
Okay.
And, we just about finished it up on the farm bill, but it is amazing. We were talking during break. I mean, I worked in insurance for many years, and farmers used to carry insurance if their crops didn't, if they failed for whatever reason. And, I mean, farmers didn't get subsidies. They certainly didn't go for sushi rice, sheep marketing, and the maple syrup business. And it's just,
maple. You know what the attraction is of the maple syrup business, Melody?
What, Al?
It's very sweet.
I guess.
Okay, so if you're in favor of the maple syrup business, that means you're a good American. And anyone who says anything bad about the maple syrup business, that's bad American. Understand? So you got to be on the right side of these sweet issues. What's next, Melody?
I don't know, Al.
You don't know.
I don't know.
Gosh. Well, let's take the Dow Jones. Well, we've already talked about that a little bit. Here's an article from, who is this from? CNN Money? Yeah. Stocks regained footing after Monday's huge loss. That's the headline. Stocks bounced back on Tuesday after suffering a steep drop on Monday. They are alleging that this is Monday's plunge may have gone too far. Analysts at Capital Economics said the sell-off Monday was overdone, that stocks will recover over the remainder of the year. This is the first week of February, and the market strategists are saying that the stocks will recover over the remainder of the year. Recover to what? I don't know. It doesn't clearly say if they mean they expect the stocks to regain the 300 points they lost yesterday over the balance of the year, or if they expect that the stocks that are down 1,000 points in the last month are going to go back up to 16,400 or thereabouts in the remainder of the year. But it's an interesting statement and perhaps a misstatement, you know. But nevertheless, that's what's in the article from CNN. They blame Monday's poor manufacturing numbers on unseasonably bad weather and said that further economic data could reflect a similar pattern. They're saying this could all happen again. But they're blaming it on unseasonably bad weather. And I look at that and I think to myself, you know, when was the last time we had a season that wasn't unseasonably hot or unseasonably cold or unseasonably wet or dry or windy? All of our seasons are unseasonable, right? And they're blaming the problem we had yesterday in the Dow Jones on unseasonably bad weather. The big event happens Friday when the government releases the monthly job reports. Investors will be looking for signs that the U.S. economy is expanding at a healthy pace, as many economists have maintained. The idea that they're looking for signs, it sounds that we've been reduced to the status of a bunch of Indians prowling through the brush, looking for a broken twig or maybe some bent grass to give us a sign that maybe we're headed toward a recovery. Recovery economists say, oh yeah, there's a recovery out there, but the investors are looking for signs that that's true. The fact that the Dow was down 326 points on Monday and up 80 points today are interesting, but not exactly unexpected. If the Dow falls over 300 points on any day, we can usually expect some sort of a recovery on the following day. The fact that's more interesting is that even after today's 80-point recovery, the Dow is still down 1,000 points in the past 30 days. During that same 30 days, gold is up $20 an ounce. $20 an ounce is not big money. On the other hand, gold has been in a steady rise since the first of this year and has gained about $55 in about 6 weeks. Again, not big money. But after the beating gold suffered in most of 2013, gold's recent rise may be evidence of an emerging trend. Gold is up nearly 5%. At the same time, the Dow is down about 6%. This is not proof of a reemerging gold bull market, but it is evidence in support of that possibility. If gold was rising at the same time the Dow was rising, I wouldn't have much confidence that gold bull market was being restored. But insofar as gold is rising, at the same time the Dow is falling, That increases the probability that we may be seeing the restoration of the gold bull market. Again, last 6 weeks aren't proof of a significant change in the gold and stock markets, but last six weeks, they are evidence of that possibility. So, you know, it's interesting to me, and we'll watch and see. Too soon to say for sure, but it's evidence. And after last year, to see a month or more of gold going up, you know, it's like, oh my gosh. It's like being released from solitary confinement or something and get out and get some sun for the first time in 6 months. You say, oh man, this is great. Yeah. So we'll watch and see. What do you think, Melody? Do we have a trend or is it too early to tell?
Well, I don't know what you did, but your voice was a little weird there for a while, but it did come back. But this was just released out of Washington now, off of the AP just about 10 minutes ago. The federal government says it will temporarily suspend sales of U.S. Treasury securities to state and local governments starting at noon on Friday. Its first step to avoid breaching the nation's borrowing limit this year. The move announced, of course, today, about 10 minutes ago, by Treasury officials, will be followed by other bookkeeping maneuvers,
yep,
which have the goal of keeping the government functioning until Congress decides to raise the borrowing limit. And, of course, the government shut down in last October. They suspended the borrowing limit, but that ends this Friday. Treasury can keep the government operating for a few weeks, but Treasury Secretary Jacob Blue has warned that he has less maneuvering room than he did last year. You wonder why, because things are supposed to be getting better. You'd think he'd have more maneuvering room. The suspension of sales of Treasury securities to state and local governments will affect their ability to manage their investment holdings.
Well, it's pretty interesting, because what the federal government is saying, now what, how can this possibly make any sense? They're not talking about suspending. Now, maybe I didn't hear you correctly, but they're suspending the sale of more bonds to state and local municipalities. True?
Right. True.
Now, how can that have any positive effect on the deficit problem they're facing?
Well, they don't have to pay the interest.
Yeah, but they don't have to pay it right now. They aren't going to pay the interest for a year or more into the future.
Right.
All right, that's not going to be a problem. And if someone wants to give me $1,000 today and maybe I've got to pay them $10 in interest this quarter, what difference does that make? I'm still making $990 on the deal. I'm coming out $990 ahead at the time when the government says, oh my gosh, we have a debt limit ceiling that's going to be a terrible problem for us. The debt limit ceiling is essentially, we resolve at least part of that by bringing in more revenue to the government. If the government can borrow more, if it can tax more, it can spend more. And it doesn't have to confront the debt limit ceiling. When they say we're going to stop selling bonds to the states and the municipalities, they are cutting their own nose to spite their face. They're reducing their income and thereby increasing the problem with the debt limit. I mean, this makes no sense at all. This, for me, I don't know. One way or another, I think they're maybe doing the states, and I look at this and I wonder if they're not doing the states and the municipalities a favor by saying, look, we're not going to sell any more of these bonds because we know we're going to default on them. And we don't want you states and municipalities to get caught in the problem any worse than you already are. I don't know what this just makes no sense. They are refusing a source of revenue at a time when they need revenue in order to justify spending. Makes no sense to me at all.
Well, if they're temporarily suspending the sales of U.S. Treasury securities to state and local governments, or are they going to suspend the sales of U.S. Treasuries to China?
Now, China's already made that suspension.
They're still buying them.
Yeah, I know they still are.
They have stuff out there that says China ain't buying them. They're still buying them. You know,
Chinese governments speak with forked tongue. Yes. In fact, so does our government. In fact, where's the government that doesn't? You know,
Are they going to suspend the sales to other areas?
Well, just, you know, the whole thing is irrational. It's just freaking irrational. We got an article down here from Reuters on Treasury's Secretary of Treasury Lou warns that U.S. default could happen quickly. He's complaining about the problem with the debt limit, which will be encountered by the end of this month. And he says this is going to be a particular problem because this is when the Treasury would normally be issuing tax refund checks, which means that if you were counting on a tax refund, receiving it in the end of February to fund your March vacation, well, maybe you better reconsider your plans, because the IRS refund check, although in the mail, the check is in the mail, it may still be a little bit It may still be a little delayed. Lou said in prepared remarks at a bipartisan policy center event, he said, without borrowing authority, at some point very soon, it would not be possible to meet all of the obligations of the federal government. He means they want Congress to allow them to borrow more money. So what we can expect is we're about to witness another sock puppet melodrama on the perils of Pauline, actually the perils of national government, where they will say, oh my gosh, the sky is falling and we've got to have increased the debt limit so we can borrow more money so we can pay our bills. We all know that very soon, after much heated debate, warnings and seeming dangers, the Congress will raise the debt ceiling and will authorize enough additional borrowing to meet the government's spending needs. Congress will soon enact more borrowing authority. The debt limit is now $17.2 trillion. They're going to increase it, who knows, $18 trillion, $19 trillion, I don't know. They'll find a number bigger than $17.2 trillion, and they will give Congress authority to borrow that much more money. But what about borrowing capacity? Congress is concerned about borrowing authority. What about borrowing capacity? Is authority to borrow all that's required? Or does the national government also require more capacity to borrow? Just because the government has more authority to borrow more funds doesn't necessarily mean that the government also has the capacity to borrow more funds. For example, what if the interest rate rose to 5%? Could the national government continue to borrow more currency at 5% interest rate? It would have the authority to borrow that money, but would it also have the capacity to borrow at a higher interest rate? What if the world's confidence in the government's ability to repay its debts fell so low that no one could lend currency to the government would lend currency to the government at the current rate of interest? The government would still have the authority to borrow $18 trillion, $19 trillion, whatever, pick a number. But would it also have the capacity to borrow if most of the world doubted that the U.S. was able to repay its debts? In fact, most of the world has stopped purchasing U.S. bonds. Federal government or Federal Reserve picked up the slack by purchasing 70 to 80% of the bonds issued by the national government under the guise of quantitative easing. But if the world just generally stopped purchasing U.S. bonds, what if the Federal Reserve also slows its purchase of bonds, government bonds? The government may still have the authority to borrow, but not the capacity. And in fact, Federal Reserve has begun to taper its current monthly rate of quantitative easing from $85 billion per month to $75 billion a month to most recently $65 billion a month. About half of that quantitative easing has been going to major banks, and about half has been going to buy government bonds. Quantitative easing tapers by $10 billion per month, the government's apparent capacity to borrow is falling by $5 billion a month or $60 billion a year. Well, the point in all of this is that just because we raise the debt limit doesn't necessarily mean that anybody's going to lend money to the government. When Congress passes a law that says, okay, you can borrow up to $20 trillion, the next question is, where are you going to borrow that additional $3 trillion? Who's going to lend it to us? Government's authority to borrow may be rising, but government's capacity to borrow may be falling, all of which implies, one, national government is so broke that it can't continue without borrowing more credit. Two, national government's capacity to borrow is drying up. Three, government must increasingly rely on tax revenues to support its spending. Four, without sufficient borrowing, government will be forced to significantly raise tax revenues and/or significantly cut government spending. And in fact, this is already happening. Five, an era of difficult and painful choices now faces government and the nation. This difficult era will probably last for several years. This era will be excused as the result of ideological gridlock between the Republican and Democrat parties. And they can't get anything done in Congress because they have this ideological difference. And the Republicans have one philosophy and the Democrats have another philosophy. And that's what they're telling us right now. But I'm not convinced that's the real issue. The real issue may be government's inability to borrow enough currency to continue to fund existing or promised government programs. Also, I guess we're going to take a commercial break right now, whether I like it or not. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a Ku band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Understand my connection is not generating good sound quality. At least Melody is not hearing it. I don't know if I was working out at the station. But in any case, we'll try to deal with that or maybe just ignore it. I don't know. It's probably too late in the program to deal with it, but we'll ignore it. I was just going through a list of consequences. Where we talk about is the government's borrowing problem based on the idea that they don't have authority to borrow more than $17.2 trillion, which is the size of the national debt. Is that the problem? Or is the real problem that... Frank is telling me the sound was garbled for about 30 seconds after the break, but now it's cleared up. That's what he says. We'll see. The question is whether or not the government's problem is the capacity to borrow or the authority to borrow. They can increase the authority and say, okay, you can borrow up to $19 trillion, $20 trillion, $100 trillion, but can they find anyone who will lend them the money? And if they don't, we can expect to see a day when Congress grants the government the authority to borrow another $1 trillion or $2 trillion or $10 trillion. But even with that additional authority, government may lack the capacity to borrow more than another, who knows, $500 billion, $200 billion. I don't know what the number is going to be, but the day is going to come when they're going to say, we'd like to borrow some more money, and everybody's going to say, no way, Uncle Samuel. You know, you're not going to get no more money from us. Why? Because we can't pay our debts. We've got a caller, Dave from Michigan. I believe Dave is on the line. Are you still there, Dave?
I am still here.
Thanks for waiting.
I'm having bad reception today also. So I've got, last week, I was an extraordinary program with Jim Wood on the news.
I'll tell you what, Dave. Your reception, I hope my reception or my transmission was not as bad as yours. Right now I'm having trouble understanding what you're saying.
Okay, I'll try it again. Last week I heard an extraordinary program with Jim Willie on. Have you heard about his program last week?
I didn't. I heard Jim Willie and I didn't hear what program you were talking about.
Okay.
What's your question?
The program True News.
Yep. Okay,
so what's about the program that he was on?
I don't know. I hear so much, I can't remember what all I hear. Maybe I heard, maybe I didn't hear. You're going to have to tell us where. Be a little more specific.
Two items on this program are absolutely important. The first is that I believe that the government defaulted last fall when they shut down. Did you get that?
Say again. I think what we're going to have to do.
You're going to have to reconnect, please.
Dave, you're going to have to reconnect so we can hear. Go ahead and try calling. Hang up. Try calling back in again. We'll take your call when it gets in here, and we'll see if we have a better connection. And if we don't, you know who's going to be blamed, don't you, Dave? Frank, the producer. Frank will take the heat for this. Well, okay, we're waiting for Dave to call back in, and while we wait... And while Frank, I don't know, by the time we get done, Dave may have to call back in.
Let's just talk about something instead of just waiting. We've got, I didn't know if you wanted to finish up what you were talking about, Al, about the...
I've said enough, but I'm just saying that the problem is not... You know, one of the things that strikes me as important, at least potentially important, is the possibility that what passes for gridlock in Congress today... So, oh my gosh, the Republicans, they're always stopping the Democrats. And the Democrats won't agree with the Republicans. And it's philosophical problems and ideological problems. But is that what it is? Or is the problem that the government doesn't have enough money to allow the congressmen and the senators to legislate and broker deals and back big programs the way they have in the past? Is the problem ideological, or is the problem that the government is broke? And therefore, the people that are left are fighting ferociously among themselves for whatever scraps are left in the Treasury that they might be able to spend to ingratiate themselves to special interests and or their constituents. So that was what we're talking about. Dave is back on the phone, though. Let's see if we can hear. Dave, can we hear what you're saying now?
Hey, I hope so. How's this?
It's not.
Why don't you just go ahead and tell us what you're going to say so we can find out, Dave?
I will. Jim Willie was on True News last week, and two extraordinary things that he said. The first one was that he believed the government defaulted last fall when they shut down. The second one was that China has purchased the Federal Reserve. And I'll listen to your comments off the air. Did you get
I got you. I heard what you said, Dave.
We'll talk about
it. Okay, thank you, Dave.
Thanks, Dave.
First, has the government defaulted last fall when the government shutdown took place? Well, you could make that argument on one level, I suppose. I mean, we can make the argument that the government is defaulting on a daily basis, or it defaulted last fall, but it defaulted for sure. Back in 1971, when it went off the gold standard relative to international debt. They'd already taken gold out of, they defaulted relative to the American people by removing gold from domestic circulation in 1933 and removing silver from domestic circulation between 1964 and 1968. They'd already defaulted with we the people. But they were still paying gold for dollars that were held by foreign individuals, foreign corporations, foreign governments, and so on. And they would redeem those dollars with gold. When they shut down and they said, oh, we'll close down the gold window, they defaulted on their obligation to pay those debts with gold. We can make, I can make an argument that is at least compelling for me, that the government has been in a constant state of default since it went completely off a precious metal standard back in 1971. That translates into what, 33 years or something like that, about, or excuse me, 43 years that they've been in a state of default. So whether or not they defaulted last fall, I don't know. But, you know, it just depends on your perspective and how you define things. I would argue they've been in a state of default now for 43 years. And soon, even though they've done that, somehow the world has not held them accountable until lately. And the day may be coming when the world finally says, look, enough of this. You can't keep paying previous debts with more checks. This is equivalent to a guy, if I borrow $1,000 from Melody, Melody lends me $1,000, I give her a check for $1,000 and the check bounces. And Melody complains about it, I give her another check for $1,000 and that one bounces. And she complains, I give her another check. Well, for $1,000, I can write a whole bunch of insufficient fund checks. You understand? And if there's no one to impose a penalty on me, why not? And that's what our government's been allowed to get away with for since 1971. They've been writing non-sufficient fund checks. They've been defaulting on their defaults, on their defaults, on their defaults. So is it significant that the government defaulted last fall, that may have defaulted last fall? I don't know. You know, it may be that we're just getting closer to a final moment where everybody says, enough, you got to start paying your bills in gold or something tangible. The second point is the rumor that China has purchased part of the Federal Reserve. I'm very skeptical. All right, I've heard the rumor. I doubt that it's true. The Federal Reserve is ultimately owned by some of the richest families in the world. And I can't imagine that those families, it is one of the most lucrative rackets the world's ever seen. It's got to be a cornerstone of much of the wealth that those families have accumulated over the past century. It lies close to the heart of government programs that have taken this nation from something extraordinary and reduced it down to where we may be a second world status, at least if not a third world status, in the foreseeable future. I can't imagine that the people who own the Federal Reserve or any part of it are inclined to sell part of the Federal Reserve to China. Again, these are private individuals, you understand. Federal Reserve isn't the government. It's not part of the government. This is a private entity. And why would someone sell an extraordinary cash cow like the Federal Reserve to China? The people who own the Federal Reserve arguably have more money than China. Why would they want to sell it? I can see where maybe our government might be crazy enough to do it, because they're broke. They need the money. They have to sell the wife and the kids before we're done here because, hey, we're short, you know. We may even have to sell the Federal Reserve. The government might think that, but the owners, the private owners of the Federal Reserve, I find that hard to believe. I am not inclined to believe that the Federal Reserve, certainly in whole and even in part, has been sold to China. I stand to be corrected, I guarantee. I can't tell you that's God's truth, but I'll need to see more evidence before I believe those stories. So,
I agree with you, Al. I can't imagine, you know, what they would want from China. I mean, they have everything.
Why would they want to sell that? As much trouble as this country has, spectacular resources.
I don't know what his arguments are to have him come to that conclusion. However, we do know that the 100-year contract expired. And
the only reason I can imagine that they would dump summerall of the Federal Reserve on China is because China, the Federal Reserve, is now something like $4 trillion in debt on its balance sheet. And it might be that somebody says, all right, let's just dump it on China. Let them pay it, pay us for it, and we'll stick them with $4 trillion in debt. It's conceivable. I don't think it's true, but it's conceivable. But it's the only way it seems, it's the only way it seems likely or probable to me. What's next, Melody?
Oh, we want to thank Dave for calling in, though, with that information. And folks, you can call us anytime. We have a toll-free number. You can call in. We're just about winding down on the program, Al.
Yeah, we are. We've got 2.5 minutes to go, Melody. Shall we knock off early or...
I got work. I have a lot of work I have to do.
Here's one for us. Here's Congress. Here's this from the Washington Times. Here's the headline. Congress seeks to jack up fees on home heating oil in midst of frigid winter. Okay? Congress's mammoth farm bill restores the proposition of the imposition of an extra fee on home heating oil, hitting consumers in cold weather states just as utility costs are spiking. The fee, it doesn't amount to much, only 0.2 cents on every gallon sold, was tacked on at the end of the 959-page farm bill, which is winding its way through Capitol Hill. The fee could last for nearly 20 years, would siphon off money to develop equipment that is cheaper, more efficient, and encourage consumers to update their equipment. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The heating oil fee was backed by Northeast lawmakers who said it would fund important research to benefit consumers. That's what we like to hear. The government is out giving us more benefits. You know, if we get more benefits, we're going to be living in chains, in cages. You understand? They keep giving us all these benefits, and there won't be any semblance of freedom left because government is here to help us. You all know that. That's why they're raising taxes on heating oil in the wintertime. That will be helpful. Understand? Presumably next summer when the temperature reaches 100 degrees, the government will also be here to help us by raising taxes on air conditioning. The point I'm making is that government, some of the stuff they do is just so freaking stupid. You wonder, are they all on drugs? Is everybody in Washington on drugs? Or are they all dealing drugs? Or how do we explain these things, Melody? They're raising the tax on heating oil. And I know it's a trivial. It's not a big raise. It's not a significant raise. But in the wintertime, they raise the tax on heating oil. Does anyone up there have any idea what this is going to mean?
They raise the tax on heating oil, but then they give this, you know, they give an allowance to the people to help pay for the increases. So... it's like, just leave it all alone.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's one of the things.
Why raise
somebody
it
needs
and give
to
out
put
money?
These guys, they really do need to go on drugs. They need to go on something that will put them to sleep for probably about 60% of the time they spend in Congress. They should spend napping. Give them a nap, give them a little blanket, give them some graham crackers and milk, and if they sleep, they won't cause as much trouble. I'm Alfred Addis. We're out of time. Thanks for listening. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom. Be back mañana. In the meantime, good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
Bye.